So gives me great pleasure to announce that we have somebody who's kind of a big deal. And I'd like to introduce Jessica.
All right, my name's Jessica, I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't nervous until I stood up right now, and I'm super nervous. It's funny because when I first got sober and I started coming to speaker meetings, I used to think that that would be a really cool thing if somebody were to ask me to speak and if I could put together enough sobriety to speak. And then when Kristen asked me, we were talking to a newcomer, and I was sharing a little bit about my story, and she asked me to be the speaker for this meeting. I was like, no, I don't want to get up there in front of everybody. But I spoke with a few people, and I thought about it, and I prayed about it, and I felt like, you know, all I'm doing is telling you guys my story, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me now. So I will start with the basics. My sobriety date is April 23rd, 2014. My home group is the women's group and work it at 10 a.m. And I love the happy hour meeting. I grew up here in Santa Maria. We moved here when I was in kindergarten. I'm the oldest of six kids. I did not have a normal childhood growing up at all. My mom had, when we were growing up, there was five of us, and there was four different dads. So we all had different last names growing up, and my dad is a drug addict and an alcoholic, and so I knew what it was like growing up and being a child of a drug addict. He was never around. Him and my mom separated when I was 2 years old, and he was the kind of dad that would show up for a few months and would take off, and I wouldn't hear from him for about a year or so. And he would come back, you know, with some sob story about, you know, this woman did him wrong and this and that, and, you know, he's going to make it right and he's going to be that dad, you know. And a few months later, the next drug came along, and he was out. We moved around a lot. I went to a few different schools when I was in elementary school. When I was in fourth grade, right in the middle of fourth grade, we moved to Orchid. And I had been in Santa Maria. I was one of the only white girls in my school. And so when I moved to Orchid, there was nothing but white people. And I was the new kid. And I just, the most horrible things these girls did to me. I'll never forget this. This horrible letter was written to this boy that they found out I had a crush on. And it got me sent to the principal's office, and I just remember feeling so different. And, you know, it's funny because when I came into AA and I heard a lot of people talk about being different, I didn't relate to that at first. But once the fog started to clear and I stopped differentiating and started relating to things, I related to that. And I thought back to my childhood, and I felt so different for so long. I couldn't, you know, my family, there wasn't like, you know, the Perez family. It wasn't the Smith family. It wasn't one family. We were the Brady Bunch because we were, everyone had a different last name, you know. And I remember thinking that was a normal. And then when I started going to school and started going to friends' houses, and realizing that there isn't four different dads. Everyone, normal people, had one mom and one dad. And I remember there was a point in my life where I started to resent my mom for that. And that little resentment when I was a kid with her, you know, I look back on it now, and it's a snowball effect. You know, I can relate to resentments here a lot because, for me, resentments are, they start with something so small, and I make, a mountain out of a molehill. I create this monstrous thing in my head, and I've never had the ability to let things go. And so my first drink was, I don't remember. There was drinking in my family at all times. But we had my first drunk. I was 13 years old, and my mom's always worked for the restaurant, so we had this big Mexican wedding that we were invited to, and we were the only white people in the entire place. It was at the, when Napomo had the community center, and they were, you know, as a sign of respect for my mom, they were bringing her a shot of tequila and a Budweiser. And it was over and over. My mom wasn't, at that time, wasn't a really a big drinker, and after five or six, she was tossed and was passing the extra over to me and my little brother. And at 13 years old, I was blacked out drunk. I remember driving home and my mom throwing out the passenger window. I remember getting home and crawling to the bathroom. I remember them saying, oh my God, Jessica's going to be such an emotional drunk, because I was crying. And I remember waking up after that and wanting to do it again. I can relate to I drank for the effect. I loved getting fucked up. That was what I drank for. What's the point of just drinking a beer? I don't get that. I don't, you know, yeah, I drink for the taste. There's some things that I enjoy the taste of, but my ultimate effect, the ultimate reason I drank was to get messed up. And so when, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. When I was 11 years old, my middle brother, Brady, was diagnosed with aplastic anemia. And a lot of people don't know what that means. I'm still not even sure I know what that means. I know it's a blood disorder, and it caused a lot of trips to the hospital. The first trip was 14 days. They had a helicopter him to a cottage hospital because his platelet count and his white blood cell count was so low that they told my mom if she had waited one more day to take him to the hospital, he wouldn't have lived. And he was sick for a year. And I just, there were so many trips to, we called it Camp Cottage and Camp Marion, because there was so many overnight visits. And my mom was a single mom. So my aunt had was actually living with us before my brother got diagnosed, and it was a godsend that she was there. And because we spent a lot of time with her, my mom would have to go to the hospital, you know, overnight. There was trips down to Santa Barbara just because the doctors here had no idea what to do with him. So she had to go to Santa Barbara a lot. And after about 9 to 10 months of him being sick and not getting any better, and it just progressively getting worse, they had said that the last straw was they needed to do a bone marrow transplant. And in order to do a bone marrow transplant, they had to kill out and wipe out all of the bone marrow in his body and then replace it with this stem cell bone marrow that they were trying for the first time. And me and my brother and my sister, we left to go and lived in South Carolina with my grandparents. And we went, and my mom went down and stayed in LA with my brother, and it was going to be a 3 to 4 month process from the time that to do all the radiation to kill the bone marrow and then to put it and let it grow and let him get healthier. And we were supposed to be gone until September, and about mid-August, my mom calls my dad up and like, I need the kids home now. I guess his organs had started shutting down, and they needed us to come home and say goodbye to him. And at 12 years old, I had to walk into a hospital room and say goodbye to my brother, who was only 8 years old. And I remember just feeling like I was, like, it was the first, like, I don't know how to explain it. It was like almost an out-of-body experience. I watched me walk into this room. And it was the first time in my life that I checked out. My therapist told me I have this great ability to check out. My body's there, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but mentally I'm just gone. And that was the first time I did that. And we stayed at the Ronald McDonald House for a few days. We were told we were going to come home. We were going to get the house ready, and he was going to come home, and they were going to let him die at home. And 2 days or a day, 1 or 2 days before he was supposed to come home, he ended up passing. And just, you know, that kind of death at such a young age, I had no idea what that was, you know, the repercussions of that in my life today. And, you know, and what it did to our family, you know. My mom was checked out for a while. She, you know, she had to hold it together because she was a single mom. She still had 4 kids that needed her. And so she did the best she could, you know. And I remember what I took from her from this is that to be this strong woman, you can't let people see you weak. You know, and I remember seeing her cry one time through that whole process, and it was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, you should not have seen me like this. And I just remember thinking, well, what's so bad about that? So, you know, what I took from that is to push things up to the side and to be the strong person regardless of what it was, you know? So 6 days after his funeral, I started junior high school, which we all start junior high school, and us girls, I think it's a little bit more of an awkward stage for junior high school because you got hormones happening, periods starting, and just it's not, you know, and you're for the first time, I don't know, it's just high 13 for girls, I just think is a horrible stage. And I got drunk for the first time. I got blacked out drunk, and I loved it. I loved it because I didn't have to feel what was going on inside. I didn't have to feel, you know, 3 months before my brother passed away, my dad's mom passed away, and she was my grandmother, who I was very close with. So I had just death and tragedy, and, you know, booze was my answer. I remember I did whatever it took to get drunk. In high school, I hung out with all the seniors because all the seniors had booze. I got an older boyfriend when I was 16 years old because it was a guaranteed way to smoke weed and to get drunk. And, you know, a few months later, I got knocked up. That conversation, you know, I was told, whatever you do, don't end up like me. Don't follow in my footsteps. My mom was 16 years old when she had me. I was 17 when I had my oldest kid. My dad's name is Chris. My ex-husband's name is Chris. His mom's name was Kathy. My ex-husband's mom's name is Kathy. Like, the similarities in it, when you lay it out, it's unnerving how alike I followed in my mom's footsteps. And but my mom didn't graduate from high school, so I was determined, you know, I'm going to do this. You are all telling me I can't do this, I'm going to do it, you know? And I just think it's such an alcoholic way to think, you know? You tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it even better. And so right before I found out I was pregnant, I decided that, you know, I need to graduate high school because nobody in my family ever has. And this is prior to getting pregnant. And so I decided I was going to stop drinking. I was going to stop smoking weed. I had... At one point, they had double trouble. It's like AA, NA, SA, every A out there at the high school. And all of my friends did these, you know, this meeting, and it was always during a period of the class or during classes because they wanted to keep it anonymous. So you got to miss out on a period of school. And I liked that. I didn't like going to school. I went to school to see my friends, not to get an education. And so I would skip a class to go and hang out, and I would claim time. We'd get little chips, and, you know, it was my first experience into AA. Actually, that's not my first experience to AA. Backtrack a little bit. When I was a kid, my aunt was in recovery, and when we were little, we used to go to meetings with her at the Old Awano Club. And my brother Brady, the one that passed away, one day we were sitting around the dinner table. We're all seven of us kids and both of our moms, and we're sitting there, and he stands up, and he's like, "Hi, guys. My name's Brady, and I'm an alcoholic." And all of the kids at the table were like, "Hi, Brady." So we took turns going around and being like, "Hi, I'm Jessica, and I'm an alcoholic," having no idea that one day I'm really going to stand up here and identify as an alcoholic. So that was my first trip to AA. But, you know, as, you know, seeking recovery somewhat, you know, I was looking for the way out of class. All my friends were there. But there was something there. And this lady named, her name's Chris Sosney. She had 12 years of recovery at the time. She passed away a few years ago in a tragic car accident. But she died sober. And there was something about her. It was like, that's who I want to be when I grow up. You know, it was she was a crisis intervention counselor for the high school, and I remember I liked that. And then I didn't put together the sobriety, but now I put together, there was something about her that, you know, you see what we have, and you want what we have, and you do what we do. And I remember thinking to myself that there was something about her, and, you know, she was chewing Nicorette gum, she used to pick her teeth, there was a lot about this girl. But there was something about her, and I think it's, you know, looking back on it now, I can only pinpoint it as it was, she had that light inside of her that I think the people in this room carry with us, you know? And so I decide I'm going to quit drinking, I'm going to quit smoking weed, I get baptized in a church, I start going to youth group, but I wasn't fully there. Like, there was still this reservation that I had, so I would smoke cigarettes. And smoking cigarettes and going to church at 16 years old, that's not okay. So I just secretly do it. And then that, you know, and that was my first time of doing this, like, double life. And then I still drank, and I would still smoke weed, but not all the time. So it's not really a problem. And then I had this epiphany about 2 weeks before I found out I was pregnant. I'm going to stop doing everything. When I found out I was pregnant. And thank God I stopped doing everything. And, you know, I was able to pull myself together, and me and my baby's dad, and we ended up getting married. And, you know, I remember my aunt sat there, and she told me one day, not her but another one, was like, you don't need to do this. You don't have to get married. This is wrong. You're going to end up like your mom. And I just remember thinking, like, fuck you. I'm going to do it anyways, and this is going to be the best decision ever. I'm not going to be that normal 17-year-old girl who gets knocked up and married and divorced by 18. I'm not going to be that girl. And so, you know, I gave it everything. For the first 2 years, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I have other issues, not drugs, but I like to talk to men because men have been my other, like, escape. And for 2 solid years in that marriage, I did nothing wrong. I was perfect. At least in my head, I was. And after my second son was born, I had gained a lot of weight. I was no longer this cute, young, little 19-year-old girl that I should have been. I was, like, 230. I had, you know, I just had really bad self-esteem. I realized, I looked in the mirror one day, and I remember, I cannot believe this is my life right now. I have turned into my mom. I'm 19, I'm married, and I have 2 kids. And I have a husband. Like, who goes to prom with a wedding ring on? This girl did. I graduated on stage with my class with a kid in the stand, and they butchered my married last name. Like, it was just, this is not what I wanted. And I started acting out. I had got a boyfriend while I was married. And then I was like, I don't want to be married anymore, so you can move out. I'm going to be with this boyfriend. That did not work out. And then my go-to is every time something big didn't happen or work out that I wanted, I ran to my husband again. Oh, take me back. I'm so sorry. I'll never do this again. And so I ended up with a third child. And I thought it was going to save our marriage. It was going to be what it took. And in that time, back up a little bit, when I was acting out, I was drinking a lot. I was going out. I was working at a restaurant here in town, and I was hanging out with girls that were my age. Well, girls that are 19, 20 years old don't have a husband. They don't have kids, and they go out and they party, and that's what, you know, is age-appropriate behavior in my book. And so we'd go out to the grad, we would drink a bottle of vodka on our way up there, go hang out, dance for a little bit, come out and drink more. And I just wanted to be a part of it. And when I was drinking, I was a part of them. And I would give out phone numbers, you know, and I just was going down this really dark path. And I remember feeling super scared. And I had this girlfriend of mine, and right about this time, she moved in with me. And she had a boyfriend, and this boyfriend of hers had just gotten sober. And I remember thinking to myself, I really don't know if I want this person living in my house. We drink a lot. And this guy's trying to get sober, like, and he's like, no, I'm okay. I'm totally okay with this. And I'm like, all right, you're moving into my home. I am not stopping what I'm doing because you decide you have a drinking problem. And they move in. I have my third son. And You know, this is good. He's going to be the one that fixes it all. And I was pregnant during my 21st birthday. And for an alcoholic of my type, not being able to, like, go out on your 21st birthday, it sucked. I had to go out and buy a 12-pack of beer for everyone else to drink on my birthday. And, sorry, I'm pregnant walking into a store buying a 12-pack of beer just because it's my 21st birthday. And afterwards, my dad had gotten, he was incarcerated for 5.5, 6 years, pretty much from the time that I was 13 to 19, he was incarcerated for armed robbery. And he got out right before I found out I was pregnant with my third son. And I remember being, I had written him off. He was done. He was out of my life. No good, no more. And he came back in, and that was my first attempt at forgiveness. And I was going to, because I was so desperate growing up, you know, I look back on it now into many years of therapy and working my steps and talking to all of you people, I realize I have some daddy issues a little bit. And I wanted so desperately when he got out, I wanted everything to be fixed. This was his second chance at life, you know, and he'd missed all my years, but now he had grandkids and he could, like, make it work with them. And I wanted so desperately for that to work. So I forgave him of everything. I let him back into my life, and I told him that he was able to come back in on one condition. He was not able to do to my kids what he did to me, and that was my biggest fear. And he's an addict. He had no recovery. He started drinking, and that was his substitution for drugs. And he became a blackout binge drinker. And I, you know, after I gave birth to my third son, he took me out to celebrate my 21st birthday. He told me, I will buy you every drink as long as you match me drink for drink. And my dad was 6'4", 240 pounds, and could drink like nobody. And I did. And he was so proud of me. Like, his baby girl grew up, you know. I was disgustingly drunk. And, you know, that I really feel like at that point, it marked an era for me. It was the beginning of the end. I no longer at that point stopped drinking. There, I had a few, one time me and Bree thought it was a good idea. We were going to give up booze for Lent. We're not Catholic. We're not religious. But I had a really bad birthday, and where we were both blacked out, and my family was like, oh, my God. So we thought, you know what, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to give up booze for Lent. And, well, we didn't really give it up. There was, like, some drinking in between. Like, I was thirsty, so I just had one beer, so it doesn't really count. We got really drunk, like, 2 days afterwards. We decided to give it up. And then we counted down till Easter, and at midnight on Easter, we drank. But we weren't going to go back to vodka because that was our problem. And so from that point forward, I can see it now in my head. It was the progression, you know. And they talk about in this room how this is a progressive disease, and I see it now looking back. I started, you know, I would only drink beer after work, and, you know, the only time I ever drank hard liquor was when it was in a mixed drink, but then I couldn't do that all the time because they would sneak up on me, and then all of a sudden I'm super drunk, and I don't know how I got that way. So it was only special occasions, and then, you know, and through this period of time, I am, you know, fighting with my ex-husband all the time. You know, have kicked him out a few times, had a boyfriend, kicked him out, got him, you know, he broke up with me, so husband come move back in, fix me. And it was this really ugly cycle. And at one point, about 4.5 years ago, I wanted to end this cycle. So I moved out, and shortly after I moved out, I lost my job. And, you know, I'm not an alcoholic that's lost a bunch. I don't have a lot of jobs in my job history. I have jobs for long term. I've never been sent home because I was drunk. But about this point 4 years ago, I started coming to work drunk. I call it my give a damn got busted. I had no more fucks left to give, and I was full blown. I was a full blown. That kind of like when they talk about where you cross that line and you no longer control your drinking. Right about 4.5 years ago is when that happened for me. I walked through the death of my father, who swallowed an 8-ball of cocaine, and at 22 years old, I had to pull the plug on him. And I remember just hating him so much because of it, you know, like, you did this, like, you know, there's most death you can, like, feel bad for, like, there's sad and heartache, and this, there was just so much anger and so much bitterness, like, how dare you, you know, I finally let you back in, I finally give you this opportunity, and you're going to blow it off because you're an addict, like, screw you. Now looking back on that, I don't have that mentality so much. I'm working on it, but it's hard because, you know, when we don't realize as being alcoholics and addicts the lives that we hurt, you know, and I sure in hell did not realize that I was hurting anyone else. I thought if I was hurting anybody, I was only hurting myself. And a few years after that, about 4.5 years ago, I lost my second brother. He was 18 years old, and he was in a house fire. It was right about the time I moved out of my ex-husband. All these major life changes, and I didn't see them as major life changes mattering at all in my life at the time, but now looking back, I can. And I moved out. I lost my job because I said a stupid comment. I wasn't even drunk. I can't even blame it on that. But the day that they sent me home from that shift, I remember my friends came over. They took me to a hot tub. We got a bottle of vodka, a bottle of Jaeger, and we rolled some blunts. Because that, when something bad happened in my life, that's how I solved it. It was a bottle of vodka, a 12-pack of Newcastle, and a shit ton of weed. And I would try to just get as plastered as I possibly could. When I moved out of my ex-husband's house, there were no more roadblocks in my way. I didn't have to pretend to be a certain way. And, you know, drinking in my family has never been a bad thing. It's been very normal. So when I never had to hide my drinking. It was okay. It was normal to get drunk. It was normal at barbecues to have a 12-pack of beer. That was normal. It was normal to go camping and drink. You know, 8 o'clock, you've already had a few cups of coffee. The sun's coming out. 8 o'clock, you're cracking open a beer and drinking all day. That was normal for me. I never had any inkling in my brain to hide it, to cover it up, to, you know, don't make this such a big deal. It was like, yeah, I'm drinking, you know. And it wasn't until that point, and I had to, you know, after a few tragic events, had to move into my mom's house. You know, because I'm horrible with money. It is a downfall that I'm getting better with it, but it's a downfall that I have. And, you know, when you're drunk, my money is for booze. You know, I have done some horrible things to get money for booze. I've sold my kids' fundraising money to buy booze. I have searched bedroom and purse and underneath couch cushions to get enough change to buy a bottle of vodka and a 2-liter of some horrible chaser just to get the vodka down, you know. I put tabs at liquor stores to get booze and, you know, going in there and giving them half of what I've made, half to pay for what I've borrowed and the other half to get a new, you know, another bottle and a 12-pack of beer, and that was my combination, and things really spiraled out of control. I started at another minimum wage job. You know, I was making really good money, and I went down to, like, making nothing. You know, that next job, I remember the first day I went in, I was drunk, because I knew that I was going to be drunk at this job, so I needed to learn it drunk. So I knew how to do this drunk. I mean, they talk about insanity in this place, and I can relate to it. You know, I trusted a man with everything, and he screwed me over, and I lost everything. I did a geographic change because I thought Santa Maria was the problem. I moved to San Jose, and, you know, I was homeless. I had no job, no money. I had to give my kids up to their dad, and I moved to San Jose to live on a couch, to get my life back on, you know, put my feet on the ground and get my life back. And that didn't happen because I'm an alcoholic. I drank for those 10 months that I lived in San Jose. I was drunk almost every single night. you know, and I was living with a bunch of alcoholics who could drink, you know, who I finally had met somebody that could drink like I could, that was okay with taking shots in the morning. Most people weren't okay with taking shots in the morning. They said, are you going to have breakfast first? Vodka's my breakfast. It's a potato, right? I realized through those 9-10 months that I was living in San Jose that my kids needed me, and I needed to figure something out. My life, you know, I was 29 years old, and my life was not the way I wanted it to be. I failed at my marriage. Everything that they said that I couldn't do, I didn't end up doing. I, you know, ended up, well, separating from him. I didn't divorce him yet. And I just signed my divorce papers, like, you know, on Friday, so I'm super excited about it. I realized that I was out of control, and so I was going to move back, talk to my mom, and I was going to move back, get my kids back, I was going to get my life back together. Well, the humiliation that I felt having to move back in with my mom for the second time in my grown life, it was humiliating. I was so depressed, and I didn't realize it, but that started the beginning of the end for me moving back here. I was a bottle of vodka a day, at least. Some days were worse than others, and I remember on New Year's Eve, me and Bree, by 1 o'clock in the morning, finished a handle of vodka. Just between the two of us, I had to work that night, and I needed another bottle of vodka just to get me to work because I was so annihilated. And on January 24th, so I'd been back for a few months, I had my last blackout binge weekend, and some pretty humiliating things happened, and I thought they were hilarious. Thought it was cool to talk at a bar full of men about some really inappropriate stuff out loud for over an hour. I thought the things that I had thought were okay to do now humiliate the shit out of me. And on January 25th was my last drunk. It was, didn't realize this at the time, but it was the anniversary of my father's death. And I had no idea. I was sitting at the bar. We were drinking margaritas for the third day in a row, Louis B's $3 margaritas. I was in heaven. And we sat there all day. And my oldest son's birthday party was that day, and I ended up missing it. And I remember getting text messages from his dad while I was sitting at the bar going, where are you? Are you coming? Like, what's going on? And I just ignored him. Like, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be right now. You have the kids. The kids are safe, you know? And I woke up that morning at about 4 o'clock in the morning. I was laying next to some guy that I made my boyfriend. I had no idea where I was. I had no idea what happened. And I was that kind of drunk that I would look at my phone the next morning, like, who did I call? Where are the pictures? Like, what text messages were sent? Trying to pinpoint, you know, and then I'd call Bree and be like, what do you remember? Okay, this is what I remember. Let's try to, like, you know, at least we could get some kind of, like, map of where and what happened. I call Polaroid snapshots, you know, throughout the night. All right, good. Now we're okay. At least we know we're all good. All right. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning. I had all of these text messages, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, oh, my God. And I sent Bree these text messages. I am a horrible mom. I'm a piece of shit. Incomprehensible demoralization. I felt that. And I swore up and down that I wasn't going to drink. I was going to give myself a 30-day detox period to get my to control. You know, I am not one of those people that gave up drinking a bunch of times. That's not my story. I never thought I was ever going to give up drinking. I was okay. I was a functioning alcoholic. I never lost a job. I never got a DUI. I never lost my kids. All of these things I never did, but, you know, and that was my criteria. If I got a DUI, I might be an alcoholic. but probably not still. That was just a bad, I shouldn't have done that. I won't do it again. You know, I didn't have these, I never thought I was an alcoholic that would come to AA. I thought I was an alcoholic that liked to drink a lot, but not one that was going to come and get sober. And so I swore I wasn't going to drink. I was going to give myself 30 days to detox and regain that control. And I couldn't. By noon, I was taking shots of vodka at lunch. And but I wasn't going to get drunk, you know. So I had a few more shots throughout the day and go to work. After work, I go and I pick up a six-pack of beer because that was my routine. I worked in Pismo, buy a six-pack, drink it on my way home. And I went and bought it. And I was like, what am I doing? I said I wasn't going to drink. Oh, I already had shots of vodka today, so I'll start tomorrow. And that next morning, I woke up, and I just did not like the way I felt. I had this feeling like you missed your kid's birthday party, you said you weren't going to drink, and you drank. Like, what kind of, you know, and then Bree calls me, and she was super upset about, you know, that 4 days we were together, and we got together and we did what we always did. We tried to put together the time frame and we laughed and we cried and we laughed and we cried. And the only thing that was different that day was instead of getting a bottle of vodka, for some reason, no, I know what the reason was, her friend got a DUI and was like, oh, let's go to an AA meeting drunk. And we're like, that would be so much fun. And so we were going to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and come to the 1600 Club drunk and go to a meeting. And for whatever reason, we didn't get that bottle of vodka, and we got our ass to a meeting anyways. And I remember pulling up in front of it, and I was so scared that I was going to know somebody because my aunt's in recovery. I've had friends that were in recovery, and I did not want anyone to see me that knew me. And I said, I looked at Brady, and I said, if you tell anybody, not a single word, like nobody is to know that I walked into this meeting right now, because then they might actually think that I have a problem. They all knew I had a problem. I told her, I said, I'm not planning on quitting drinking. This is not my plan. I need to feel better. I felt like crap. And I walked into a meeting, and we sat right there where my sponsor's sitting against the wall on the door. And Shirley, she's this old lady. She was sitting over there with that yellow guy, the shirt with the yellow shirt is. Are you right there? And she read more about alcoholism. And I could barely hear anything that she said. But the words that stuck out to me were the incomprehensible demoralization and the wanting to control it. I can't remember the exact words off the top of my head right now. Sure, Jim could help me out if I wanted to. it talked about that wanting control, and I related to that. And it was funny because when I walked in here, I wanted control in my drinking. And to hear that, you know, it's titled more about alcoholism, wanting that control, the insanity of it all, and I just, you know, I felt like I was exactly where I needed to be. And Bree was emotional, crying, and I was like, I'm just not there yet. I can't cry. And then afterwards, you know, we lived tore up. It was 4 days of nonstop drinking, no showering. Like, we smelled, like, we had mixed mesh clothes on. Like, it was, we were not a hot site at all. And all of a sudden, all these people came up, like, after the meeting, and they were hugging on us and loving on us. And she was crying, and I started crying. That was, like, my moment, and people were hugging on us. A fight broke out because they were, like, trying to hug us, all of us together. It was crazy. And I just remember going, what the hell is going on here? And they gave us all these phone numbers. And I remember leaving that meeting. I went right home, and I told my mom, I'm an alcoholic. And she's like, I know. I was like, but no, I'm going to quit drinking this time. And she's like, okay. Like, have fun with that. She said, maybe you should call your aunt. And I said, really? Okay. So I called her, and she came over the next day, and we talked. I went to another meeting. She took me to the Lion's Den meeting. I went to like 3 or 4 meetings that second day of sobriety, and I realized that I wanted this. because you guys had something in this room that I hadn't ever felt at all growing up in my life, and that was hope. You know, I didn't know life could be better. I didn't know you could go camping and not drink. I didn't know you could go to the beach and not drink. I didn't know you could do these things sober. I had no idea. And I got my belly button birthday is February 20th. And I was going to be 30 years old. And I remember thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't commit to this quite yet. Like, I got my 30th birthday coming up, and it's a big deal. We had these, like, plans. I was going to take 30, we were going to have a checklist of 30 dirty things that I was going to do. I was going to have to take 30 shots. Like, I mean, just, we had this insane thing we were going to do for my birthday, and I was like, maybe I won't get, I'm not ready yet. And, you know, but I just kept coming back. You know, I heard it, and I kept coming back. I just went to another meeting. There, I remember, God, probably the first, like, 6 months, we were going to, like, 3 or 4 meetings a day, sometimes at least 2. You know, I would either go to the noon. Some days there was a 10 a.m. women's meeting, the noon meeting, the 5:30. Sometimes I'd go to Orchid and go to the 8 o'clock meeting or speaker meeting. The first time we ever showed up to the Bethel Church, a speaker meeting, we were in basketball shorts and flip-flops and hair was all a mess. And we walked into that meeting and everyone's wearing ties and nice shirts. And I'm like, what the hell? Is this an AA meeting? Like, why are you guys all dressed up? We didn't stay. We actually went and had pie with Steve at the Panty. True story. And, you know, and I just remember, though, like, there was this fellowship, and they, you know, the women especially tried so hard to just make us feel a part of. And so for the first 87 days, I didn't have a drink. But nobody in here tells you that you can't smoke weed and still be sober. I didn't know that was a thing. There's no signs up that say that. I didn't consider it a drug. You know, it grew from the earth. It was, you know, it's meant for that reason. And Bree calls me up and she's like, so I just want to tell you, I told my sponsor that I've been smoking weed and I got honest and now I'm not going to do it anymore. And I said, well, that's nice. You didn't tell her about me, right? I'm not giving this up. I did my first 3 steps while I was smoking a bowl. Like, I'm not giving this up. And she goes, no, I didn't say anything, but they probably know because we do everything together. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I was pissed. I was like, screw this. I don't want to be sober anymore. Like, this is dumb. Like, you know, I already quit drinking. Like, what more do you guys want from me? And so we had this huge plan. We were going to go out, you know, okay, we'll do it. Like, finally, I got to the point where I was like, I want what they have, but I got to do what they do. And if that means not smoking weed, okay, we're going to smoke everything we have tonight. And then we're going to get drunk, because if I'm going to change my sobriety date, because that's what they told me, I had to change my sobriety date over this thing. And I had to literally give up those 87 days. And I worked hard. Those 87 days, even though I smoked weed through them, were really hard to not drink, you know? Really hard. And so we were going to drink, but we were going to do it smart because we had heard of these horror stories of people going out and drinking for one night and then, like, getting that DUI that they never had or, you know. And I personally know somebody who went out for one day and got a DUI they never had. Like, I didn't want that. So we were going to get a DD. We were going to do this thing smart. And we called up the one person that we trusted to be our DD and, like, to share this information. Because we couldn't tell any of you guys. You guys would have not been okay with it. And at that point, we didn't have really, I mean, there wasn't other people that we could really, like, felt comfortable. Like, okay, we're just going to drink for one night. Only that's it. But you can't say anything to anybody. And so they came over and we had all these plans. And when it came time to, like, say it out loud to another person, because between the two of us we could talk about anything and it's not weird, it's not crazy. But to say it to another person, to bring that other person in there, it was scary. And I feel it was the biggest God shot I've ever been given. But I had this fear that all of your words started coming into my head, and mental obsession was one of them. And I realized that in those 87 days, I had had the mental obsession lifted from me. I don't know when it happened, I don't know how it happened, but it did. And I remember thinking to myself, if I drink tonight, that mental obsession's coming back. And that scared the crap out of me. I did not... I'd worked so hard to get that gone. Like, why would I want that back? And we had this crazy ESPN moment where we didn't, like, say anything, but we knew that neither one of us were going to do it. And she, the girl, was super freaked out by us, left, and we just cried. I mean, like, it was that moment of, I don't know. It was, I realized at that moment that I had fully surrendered to this thing, that there was nothing, like, changing my sobriety date, like, that's a free pass. You don't get very many free passes in this program. I could have drank, and it would have been no big deal. I came back in the very next day, raised my hand, said I was a newcomer. I had all of those plans of doing it, but to not drink through that told me, I felt like it was God's way of showing me that I could get through anything and not drink. And, you know, so I changed my sobriety date. My new sobriety date is April 23rd, 2014. But, you know, I don't forget my last drink either. Because January 27th, that's a big deal for me. The day I walked in here, I raised my hand. I said, I'm an alcoholic, and I asked for help, something I had never done before. April 23rd to me means... it was the day that I fully surrendered. It was the day that I was honest, not only with all of you people, but honest with myself. And it was humiliating at first coming back in here and being a newcomer. I was 3 days away from getting my 90-day chip. Like, it was just so close. And, you know, and everyone told me, like, don't worry about it. 87 days, it's not going to mean any, like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, imagine 2 years or 3 years, and I'm like, but 87 days. Like, it was so hard to get those 87 days. And, but you know what? Today, I'm so grateful, because those 87 days, I feel like it was my practice run, you know? I could do it for 87 days, you know? And so, you know, when I got my second 30-day chip, it was cool. You know, all right. You know, I don't have to be a newcomer anymore. 60-day chip, I'd already gotten this one before. But when I got that 90-day chip, I was like, yes, I did it. And I didn't do it smoking weed. You know, at that time I had gotten a new sponsor, and I had started working the steps again, because I had worked them the first 87 days, because I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sprint through it. I'm just going to get it done because I want to stay sober. But, you know, I've taken my time a little bit more with it. I feel there, you know, step one I do every day. I know I'm powerless over alcohol, and that when I drink it, my life becomes unmanageable. But I'm an alcoholic. I am powerless over everything. Well, people just are powerless over everything. I am powerless over my coworkers, which drive me nuts. I am powerless over my mom because I love her, but I can't control her. I'm powerless over my children for the most part. You know, I am powerless over anybody. And to remind myself of that every day, it's hard to do. But, you know, I feel blessed today because I have a solution. I have a way to do this. You know, I feel bad for the people out there that don't have a way to do this, because I feel like a lot of them are miserable, and they may not even be alcoholics, you know, and I don't know where I was going with all of that, kind of got off track a little bit, but, you know, in sobriety, I have a family that I never had before. You know, my mom was great, I love her to death, and, but we have, you know, our struggles, and I have an AA mom too, you know, and that's really cool, because when I'm mad at my mom, I can go to my AA mom. I have a family. I have brotherhood and sisterhood in here that I never had out there. I had true friends today that if I needed something in a heartbeat, I know I could call over a dozen people and be here. There's people that showed up tonight just because they knew I was speaking, and, you know, it's crazy, and I've gone camping, and I didn't have to drink. that was really cool, the first time I did that. And the first time I went sober camping was with my family, who I got there at like 11 o'clock at night, and they were trashed. And I was like, oh my God, you guys are done. Go to sleep already. Like, and they kept drinking. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was me, you know? And that was, that's the thing too that I've been like, I see a lot, and over this, you know, almost 15 months. Oh, no, it's 15 months in 2 days. It's Friday. I see a lot of that, like, oh my God, you're crazy. Oh my God, that was me. Like, I see in so many drunk people out there. The first drunk concert I ever went to, we were at the Santa Maria Fairgrounds, and me and Bree were up front, we're all sober and enjoying this concert that I, you know, I've gotten to plenty of concerts but don't remember much of any of them. And we were there, and there was these two girls, and they were so drunk, and they were like falling over, and they're spilling their beer, they're just having a grand old time. And I'm like, at one point I was like getting so annoyed, like, God, I don't want beer on me, like, gross. So, you know, I'm sober. You know, and then at one point I looked at Brie and I was like, that was us. Like, those drunk girls right there, that was us, you know, not last year, but the year before at the fair. And I don't know, it's just this ride that I have been on the last, you know, 15 months since I have given up everything, you know, but I never left. Even those first 87 days, they're important to me because they showed me that no matter what, you know, Brian says it a lot. Don't drink, don't use, no matter what. Like, you don't have to drink or use even if you want to. That's how it is. And I've had that experience. I've wanted to drink. I've wanted to smoke a blunt. I wanted, you know, there was one point we were going to drink. I was over at Bree's house. We were bored. There wasn't even anything big or major going on, and we were bored, and we were going to drink. And for whatever reason, we had that moment where it's like, are we really going to do this, or are we going to stay sober? And we stayed sober through it. And I knew I needed to get my ass to a meeting because that's what you guys have taught me. And I came to a meeting, and one of my really good friends was drunk and had, in a matter of just a few days, had given up everything. She had lost her kids. She lost her job. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, this was, you know, and I didn't even stay for the meeting. I went outside and I hung out with her the entire time, and I just remember thinking afterwards, you know, God was showing me what would happen to me if I were to drink again. I would lose my job, I would lose my kids, I would lose all of these things, and today that's just not a price I'm willing to pay. Before, I paid it without knowing that I was paying that price. And today I know that. I know better, you know. Leonard used to tell me all the time, like, back then you didn't know, so they can't, like, don't hold yourself accountable to something you didn't know. Now you know. So now you start holding yourself accountable to the things that I know, and that's important to me. My sobriety date is the most important thing to me today. It is more important to my kids than my kids. It's more important than my relationships. It's more important than my family, and it's because I know that if I don't maintain my sobriety date, I am capable of losing every single one of them. And my kids mean the world to me. They come to meetings. They hang out here. They gave me my birthday cake. My sobriety means as much to them as it means to me. And it's amazing to see that, you know. And I've been teaching them the principles without them even knowing it. You know, what's your part in this? Okay, well, you know, I separate my kids, and I'm like, all right, what's your part? I don't care what your brother did. What is your part? What did you do, you know? And I'm teaching them their fourth step without them even realizing it. And, you know, I have three kids, so there's a good chance that one of them might, you know, end up in this room or end up in the other fellowship. And at first, when I first walked in here, I would have thought that was the most horrible thing that could have ever have happened to my children, is to be an alcoholic or a drug addict and end up in this room. But because I thought that was the most horrible thing that ever happened to me. I had to admit I was an alcoholic. That was gross. And today I'm grateful that I'm an alcoholic because I have a solution today that most people out there don't have. I have 12 steps, a way to work through pretty much any problem that I have in my life. You know, I haven't had a whole lot of big ones to have to work through them yet, but you guys say it works, so I believe you. And, you know, I have a fellowship of people. I have a higher power that I never even knew existed that I call on a lot. I called on a lot today because I get so nervous about speaking. You know, it was funny because I'll say this, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, I'm going to shut up. I always pictured, you know, when I was first new, and I would always hope that somebody would ask me to, you know, come up here and share and speak. And but I always pictured it with Bree, like, next to us, and we were gonna, like, do this, like, tag team of, like, of our story together. And you know, I'm grateful. Not very many people get to walk in here with their best friend and their drinking partner, and I was able to. And by the grace of God, we're both still here. And that's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Help cleaning up after.